I'd like to call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. The time is 8:03 a.m. on Tuesday, April 10th. Members present at this time, Representative Chris Birch, Representative Justin Parrish, Representative Dave Tallarico, Representative George Rauscher, Co-Chair Representative Andy Josephson, and myself, Representative Tarr. Please let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. I've seen other members wandering the halls, so hopefully they'll be joining us. Assisting us this morning is our recording secretary, Ms. Debbie Tillinghast. Thank you so much. And our LIO moderator, Leah Kraft. Thank you. We are back on House Bill 331 and nearing the end of the work, I believe, here. Where we left things yesterday, we were in the conversation about Amendment Number 2. And Representative Parrish, this is your amendment. And I think you had offered the amendment, and we had heard from Mr. Alper and Deputy Commissioner Barnhill, and I think that's about where we stopped.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So we're in the midst of discussion. Mm-hmm. If I may, I'll briefly restate the purpose of the amendment for anyone who may be watching.
Thank you.
So in the bill as it exists before us, we've got two percentage rates. One is a fixed 10%. And the other is about 5%, which floats on top of the true cost of borrowing for the state. And the first thing this amendment would do would be to make the 10%, the full rate, float on top of the state's true cost of borrowing as well, essentially to preserve the delta, to preserve the marginal benefit of choosing to reinvest in Alaska, or to qualify under one of the other means. The second thing it does is slightly increases the lower rate to provide by half a percent in order to provide for greater security for the state. I may be a little bit of a pessimist. I don't think I'm known for my rosy outlook on things. And I just want to make sure that the state's overall interests are preserved in a variety of price environments. If there were to be another collapse in oil prices, as we saw in the very recent past, the repayment schedule could be stretched out considerably. And in that case, going forward with the bond bill would come with a larger opportunity cost to the state, and I'd like to reduce that cost to the state. There is also a slight increase above the 10% of which will depend on the true cost of borrowing.
Representative Birch.
I am opposed to this amendment. I think we had testimony yesterday that indicated that the percent and a half was reflective of the state cost of insurance, and the floating amount wasn't 5%. It was actually the whatever the prime rate, I think it was like 3.5, or whatever the state cost of money is, plus the 1.5 to represent the cost of borrowing. And this isn't supposed to be a moneymaker for the state as far as the differential there. That 1.5%, as I recall, the testimony was directed towards giving the state an opportunity to recover the cost of basically managing, I guess, that differential there. And the liability exists one way or the other. So this effort will better manage the liability by reducing the month or the annual payment. So I speak against the amendment. I think it actually goes against the testimony we had yesterday and is not supportive of the intent and the objective of this proposal. Thank you.
Mr. Alper and Deputy Commissioner, could you please come forward?
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you for having coffee available. That's really here.
I had a question, and just thinking about this a little bit, I mean, don't we say that 7% we consider is about the average that, say, the permanent fund dollars would earn or what our investments can earn? Do we use 7% as sort of the standard for that?
Madam Chair, yeah, last year you might recall when we were looking in House Bill 111 at an interest cost figure for delinquent taxes and trying to stabilize some discrepancies among different taxes that appeared, we were working towards a goal of roughly 7%. The idea being that a dollar in tax unpaid this year is a dollar additionally out of savings that once we are in this permanent fund paradigm, which we presume eventually we'll be in, another dollar from savings we'll have to use. So when we finally get paid back by the taxpayer, getting paid back with interest at roughly our own cost, and we were using that 7% figure because it lines up with what the permanent funds investment advisors think of as their expected earnings.
Madam Chair, Mike Barnhill, Department of Revenue. Perhaps since that point in time, the permanent fund gets regular updates on its expected return. It's currently 6.5%. The 5-ish percent was derived from a combination of looking at earnings reserve assumed return as well as constitutional budget reserved assumed return, which is lower than 6.5. So it's in the 5-ish range.
Okay. And I guess I just asked this because I'm just trying to think, you know, this based on true interest cost plus 7%, if we use that sort of metric and then think about if interest rates were to rise, I'm just wondering if that's actually, you know, it would probably not exceed 10%, but in a way could be, you know, if we use that similar line of thinking, I guess, could be more analogous to what we would, you know, the opportunity cost of those dollars for the state.
So, Madam Chair, when we put the bill together, Mr. Mitchell and the financial markets, the people he's in contact with, presumed our true interest cost at that moment to be 3.6%. We've testified to that. We don't realistically expect interest rates to go down in the next few months between, say, now and when we actually go to market for the big issue. And the first one's the big one, right? That's the $800 million bond or $600 million, somewhere in that range. So if interest rates were to rise to, say, 4, the way this amendment's structured, we would be discounting at 11, that whatever that number is, plus 7. So it would be a little bit higher, the way Representative Parrish says it, protecting the states a little bit more. The way industry would receive it, a slightly smaller offer. To put the number in magnitude, you may recall yesterday we had a piece of paper that showed the expected buyout offer for a $100 million company. In that scenario, the delta between those two, between the 5.1 and the 10, was about $7 million, a bit less. So if we're talking half a percentage point without modeling it, you could more or less presume that for that company it might move our buyout order by $700,000, give or take. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments on this amendment? I'm just going to take a brief at ease. Representative Johnson joined us at 8:10. And we just have had Representative Drummond join us at the at ease. And I guess we had comments. I don't know if you have any comments on Amendment Number 2, Representative Drummond. We're just about to wrap this one up.
No, sorry, Madam Chair. I do not, and okay. I apologize for being late.
Okay. I guess my last comment on this will just be I like the conversation that's happening around this amendment because it's not that even if we go with what's suggested with this proposal, that there aren't ways to sort of tweak it and think about whether we should have additional protections for the state. And I do like the way this one would bump up just a little bit above 10%, but thinking about opportunity costs. So I think I had the objection for purposes of discussion, but I am going to support.
I had the objection.
Oh, you had the objection?
Yeah, you objected also. I got two objections on this one.
You had me? Okay. A recording secretary had me, Representative Rauscher. So I'm going to remove my objection because I'm going to support this amendment. And so.
Well, I'd like to keep my
objection.
Imaginary objection.
Okay. We will note that. So there is an objection. And do you want to speak to your objection?
No, I don't think that I got the impression that the administration is not really in favor of this one. So
Okay. Sounds really good. And let the record note that Representative Lincoln joined us at 8:15. So we have everybody here right now. Okay, then, Ms. Tillinghast, would you please call the roll?
Representative Lincoln?
No.
Representative Drummond?
Let me hold until closer to the end. Thank you.
Representative Parrish?
Yes.
Representative Birch?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Rauscher?
No.
Representative Tallarico?
No.
Representative Drummond?
I'll be a yes.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Tarr?
Yes. I think 6-9.
Sorry?
I think it should be 6-3, I think, right? Because there's 9 in it.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You're no.
Right?
You're no.
Yeah. That's what I have, a 6-3. Yes. So by a vote of 6-3, amendment number 2 has not been adopted. And that completes our work on amendments. That brings the bill back before us for discussion. Any comments? Representative Birch.
I speak in support of this proposal. You know, this has been a long time coming. I think it's an innovative and creative solution to addressing a longstanding problem that actually began with the veto of the tax credits that had prior to that been kind of a longstanding and anticipated. I think this has a potential of putting dollars back into the economy, putting dollars to work, and enhancing oil production and development in Alaska. I think it addresses some of the long-term concerns that have been out there regarding our debt liability. I think we had good testimony that talked about Alaska, you know, becoming a kind of a pariah in the investment community because of our inability to address our fiscal obligations. I think this goes a long way in the right direction, and would encourage a yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Birch. Other comments? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to just get on record that I wasn't able to get the Third Amendment drafted, and nor was anyone else on the committee to explicitly say that if we put this into place, we plan to depart from the statutory schedule. And I was hoping to find some way of both honoring our statutory obligations, perhaps by having people keep their place in line, but we weren't able to get it drafted at this point. And as the bill exists right now, it would be, in my opinion, a legitimate, unfortunate, a poor choice, but perhaps a necessary one under the statute at present, to appropriate not only the statutorily designated amount, but also the whatever debt service we should decide upon. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful to members of the committee who have expressed their intention to reduce the rate of statutory payment in proportion to the amount of outstanding tax credit liability that we take off the books, so to speak, or turn into another form of debt, it's not really debt yet. Turn into debt, real legal debt, if not constitutional debt. I do remain somewhat dubious of the bill. I commend the administration for the thought that went into this. It is, in fact, a way to rebalance the playing field. It is, in fact, a way that could potentially result in more money in state coffers. I just have some serious reservations about the schedule of repayment, how it'll interact with the existing statute, and the notion of contracting state debt by another name.
Representative Parrish. Other comments?
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
thank you, Madam Chair. So I
I think one thing that hasn't been mentioned perhaps enough is to the extent there would be any liability associated with what in the law is called equitable arguments, things like reliance and estoppel and some of these kinds of concepts, these contracts would become, I think in the law they called a novation, which is a new contract. And so you can't come back later and say, well, we had this expectancy because you would have entered into a new agreement. I don't know what sort of liability is there. There's probably, I'm sure a person could write a 30 or 40 page brief about it for sure. And nothing is being threatened, but I think there's probably something there. I would be ashamed to have 37 people angry at us all at once and in front of a court. I think that there's some wisdom in this, and see the benefit of evening out the payments. I do think that there are, I don't treat the constitutional questions as entirely frivolous. I think that there have been some references to HFC and the pension obligation history and that sort of thing. And we're sort of trying to mirror some of the ways in which, I think it's Article 9, that there are sort of exceptions to the rule. But I think that on the whole, those arguments would prevail. That is, the constitutionality would be affirmed. And so I'm going to support the motion to move the bill.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Any other comments? Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I actually want to thank Mr. Alper, Mr. Barnhill, Mr. Mitchell. Mr. Milks was here with us the other day as well. And I know these gentlemen know that this is just a starting point, and they'll be back doing the same thing in front of another committee very soon, I think. But I do appreciate the full-blown explanation. I think it was very well done. When you went through the sectional, I think that probably helped everybody substantially. The potential here, I believe, and I'll echo some of the sentiments of folks, you know, is we talk about plans a lot, and believe it or not, I think this resembles a plan to resolve some of our tax credit issues. But beyond what it does for the state, I'm viewing it as I think there's a labor opportunity here for us to get some of our workforce back in action. I know some of the people that are owed credits right now have found themselves in basically a slowdown mode. I won't say shutdown, but a slowdown mode because of that. That's hampering their future plans, I think, right now. So quite honestly, if this does go forward and moves forward and we're able to accomplish that, I think we need to think about the private sector a little bit, too, and the opportunities that we'll probably have to put people back to work. I'm always very supportive of anything I think can support a living wage job. So I do appreciate this. Thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Thank you, Representative Tallarico. Any other comments? I'll just add in mine. For me, borrowing $1 billion is a big deal, so I'm glad we spent quite a bit of time reviewing the bill and considering the proposal. I'm not going to support the proposal today, mostly because of entirely because of the mechanism. I've stated in the past, I do think this is an obligation that needs to be addressed, and we even put intent language into House Bill 111 last year that said that we should pay down this obligation. And what I'm troubled by is that when right now we have this debt on the books, but we have it in a way where there is a statutory schedule for payout, and we could exceed that, which I would recommend, so that we recapture, you know, sort of catch up on the prior 2 years' vetoes, or pardon me, I guess it was three years ago now, the vetoes. But what happens when we do the corporation and then go out and issue bonds to pay for that is that becomes an obligation of the state that if we don't appropriate the dollars to pay that obligation would have a negative impact on the state's overall credit rating. And that really transfers what kind of debt it is. Right now, it's an interest-free debt that we're carrying that we should pay. I don't disagree with that. But once we bond for it, it becomes, even though it's subject to appropriation type of debt, if you know, the type of political battles that could take place over payment or non-payment really concerns me, and then the impact that could have. And it means that we would have to prioritize it over other important state needs like public safety if there were such a time as everything falls out from under us. So that's difficult for me, but I will certainly continue to follow the proposal, and I do appreciate that the administration is trying to move forward with this and agree that it would be important to get people back to work. And my preference would be just the language we put in as intent language in House Bill 111 last year, that we would have a fiscal plan and we would look over our existing obligations, including this debt, figure out how we're going to pay things, not obligate ourselves to other projects or big commitments at this time until we really get our fiscal house in order, clear the deck, and get back on track. So that's my reason for not supporting it today, and I think you'll have plenty of support, though, to get it out of committee. Any other comments? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess I just want to say this is, I think this is a good thing. I think it'll help our credibility and enhance our bond rating. I think it'll put people to work, and I think it's high time we get it done. So I'm looking forward to supporting it and moving it on.
Any other final comments? Thank you, Representative Johnson. Going once, going twice. Okay, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 331, its version 30-GH2863/A, with accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations, be moved out of committee.
Okay. As I mentioned, I'm not supporting the bill, but I'm not going to object to its moving out. Is anyone else objecting to it? Okay. Seeing no objection, House Bill 331 will move from committee. That completes our work for this morning. Just before 8:30, if you could please stick around to sign the paperwork, and then we're just back on track for our regular schedule at 1 p.m. tomorrow. Thank you so much for everyone coming for the early morning so we could do our work and get things done.